As we pick up here in Proverbs chapter 10, this is where we slow down in how and in our study of what Solomon is saying to his son, Rehoboam. Rehoboam will become the next king following Solomon when Solomon dies. But Solomon has set Rehoboam down in the first 9 chapters and basically said to him, son, you're going to have in life a direction you're going to be headed, and you're going to come to a Y in the road, and you're going to have to make a decision to go one way or the other. One way will be wise and towards that which is righteous. One way will be foolishness and to that which was wicked. Now, son, along the way as you go, if you see yourself go into that which is wicked and foolish, back out as quickly as possible and stray away from that area and get back on the right road. It's called the life of hard knocks. The interesting thing about it is the more we look at what Solomon has said to his son, and we also see the rest of the information about Solomon and his life, we realize that Solomon is trying to keep his son from making all the same mistakes that he made. Don't you wish we could just take and open our heads, our kids' heads, and pour in everything we know now that we wish we'd have known back then? Everything that we wish we had not done, we could remove out of their lives so that they don't have to go through it. They don't have to suffer the pain and the heartache. However, we also saw in the first 9 chapters that everybody's got to get burned a little bit before you realize that fire can really hurt you. Everybody has to be involved in a little of that before you can gain wisdom to know which road to take. And by the way, we all are going to come to Y's in the road, and it's not just one major Y in the road. It's many Y's in the road. We see them every single day of our life. A Y is coming in the road where we have to choose a direction of wisdom or a direction of foolishness, a direction towards that which is righteous or a direction towards that which is wicked, a direction towards that which is godly or a direction towards that which is ungodly. We have to make a decision. And the interesting thing about it is sometimes at first sight, they both look godly and neither are godly. Sometimes we have to backtrack back down the road to the other Y to realize that we've been on the wrong road and we need to go that other road because that has a Y that leads us towards godly things. I mean, life for us is constantly about dealing with our memories of our life so that we can make good choices in this life. But as we're going to see on through the rest of this, we're not exactly sure what Solomon knew about eternal life, but many of the proverbs that Solomon is going to begin teaching his son Rehoboam are about those things which are eternal. Decisions made today have eternal consequences, and they truly do. Well, as we pick up in chapter 10, verse 1, 1a just simply says, the Proverbs of Solomon. This is where they start. Now, chapter 1 through 9 were little stories and examples of Solomon sitting down with Rehoboam and going through different things that Rehoboam ought to know and understand about true wisdom and how to gain understanding and how to stay away from folly. Now, Solomon is directing Rehoboam to little snippets. Now, Proverbs are just that. They are little snippets of usually two clauses that are put together, two little thoughts with a conjunction in between them, like the word but. This does this, but this does this. And in that, they are snippets for us to learn and memorize so that whenever we are faced with the same situation and the same hiccup in our life, the same fork in the road, we remember that little snippet and we do not go the wrong direction. In other words, it helps us make the right choice. Or for some of us, we know the little snippet. We know what it means. We know that if we do what the righteous thing is to do, we will make the right choice, but we choose because of our passion and how we're built and how we think to choose the wrong choice because that's the choice we'd like to choose. Now, all of these Proverbs that Solomon is going to lay out, chapter 10 through chapter 29. There are two other chapters, by the way, but they're not written by Solomon, but we will handle them when we get there. The last two chapters are not written by Solomon. Chapters 10 through 29 are at least little snippets, and they are observations that Solomon has made about life. By the way, how many of y'all have studied psychology? A little bit. How many of you have studied sociology? How many of you studied medical field? All three of those studies, just we can name a whole bunch more, are all based on observation. Did you realize that? We observe things. We observe that if you take a little of this herb and when you have this problem, that all of a sudden the symptoms of that problem go away. Oh, okay, well, how can we make that little herb into some synthetic material that we can give everybody that's pure and, you know, and all that? Oh, we call that a pill, and it's a drug, okay? And we sell the drug for the same thing that the herb does, and it fixes it. And how do we know that that works? Because we have noticed and we have observed that whenever this happens in a person's life, if we do this, it tends to fix that. It's observation. We know that when in psychology, that when people kind of go off on a mentally deranged thing, and by the way, psychology studies individuals who have strange minds. Did you know that? That's what it is. Anytime we look at it, that's what it is. We're looking at individuals. Psychology, we look at groups of people and how groups tend to move of like kind, tend to move together and how they do things. Oh, let me break it down for you. Here's a good one. In psychology, we have learned that men and women are different. Oh, let me explain. It's interesting. And you will find this to be true. When men and women drive to the mall, in general, you got this? In general, no, we've got some oddballs that don't think this way and don't do this, but in general, a woman will speed into a parking spot, boom, park, get out so that she can get about shopping. Got it? It's all about getting in there and getting shopping. And then when she comes out to her car, I love the word, she will lollygag around about backing up, careful, and getting out, and going home, because she's done her mission. Men, according to these studies, tell us that men will go, and they will drive around the parking lot, and they really want to park up front, so they'll drive around for hours until the spot finally comes up, and then lo and behold, if possible, they will back carefully into the spot. And they'll go in and do their shopping. And then when they get out and come back, they hop in the car, put on them keys, and out they go. Women go getting in, and guys go getting out. We're different. Different gratifications that we... And by the way, there's a whole plethora, a whole lot of thoughts that go into why we do those things. And I got to thinking about it. I thought, yep, I'm one of those. I am one of those. You know, I will drive around because I want to park right up there front. So whenever I come into a parking lot, wherever it is, no matter if it's Christmas time or whatever, I don't go looking for a parking spot out, way out 15 yards or 100 yards from the door. I go right up to the front door and go looking for one thinking, hey, there's going to be one up there. My wife will say, we might as well park out here because there's not going to be parking spots out here because we got to get to shopping. Boom. You see the difference? Okay. But no, I'll wait. I'll just circle around and wait till somebody leaves. I'm not in any hurry till I'm ready to go. It's how God made us. We can think also about how God made us to think as children. One of the ways that we know as educators how to train children up properly is because we've noticed how and observed how God makes us. He's made us that in general, all kids of no matter what nationality and all adults, unless your brain has kind of got a loose wire or something, you're going to operate in a certain way. One of the ways that we know somebody has a loose wire is because they're not like everybody that doesn't have a loose wire. Have any of y'all got a loose wire? Loose brainwave somewhere? Your doctors have actually told you you've got a loose brainwave that's just kind of hanging out there dangling, doing something, and you've got this oddity about you. And that can come in all sorts of forms, of all sorts of diagnoses and all that. Observation we have. Solomon has observed as best he can in his life about people, and he has made these observations. Here it is, chapter 10, verse 1b. A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. Okay, it's time to stop because we're going to do it now and a little bit in a few more verses, but we need to catch what goes on in a proverb. In a true proverb like Solomon gives us, there is always a word on one side in a clause that matches or is counter to a word on the other side. For instance, in this one, we see the wise son is countered by the foolish son. Gladness is countered by the word grief. The father is countered by the word mother. So each one of these words on either side has a direct opposite if it's a true, pure proverb. And most of what Solomon says here are true proverbs, and they were really true in the original Hebrew, but in our translations into Greek, we've got a little bit of, into English, not Greek, whatever language tongue you speak. You know, what do we speak anyway? You know, do we speak New Yorkan or do we speak Texan? Some of y'all do speak New Yorkan. Some of y'all speak Connecticut. Some of you speak Tex-Mexian. You know what? Tex? Yeah, Tex. Whatever we speak. It's so interesting. You call up to New York, and they always say it. We know what they say. They say, you must be from, because they know, don't they? They sure know. Y'all sound perfectly fine to me when y'all talk. I do not know what is wrong with the New Yorkans, but you sound perfectly fine. Here we go. Okay, now here's the question. Does a wise son make a father glad and a foolish son makes a mother grieve? Is that what Solomon's trying to teach us? No, what he's trying to teach us is just like a wise son makes a father glad, so too a foolish son makes a mother grieve and vice versa. In other words, a wise son makes a mother glad also, and a foolish son makes a father grieve also. That's the message. You have to take what's being said there and extract it. And so, as we go through each one of these proverbs, we're going to kind of take a couple of the words, and we're going to talk about the difference between being godly and being ungodly, because all of these proverbs really fit under this godly, ungodly banner. Even though I may call this wise and foolish here, we can make a bigger banner, and I've put it on the board for you. So when we think about Proverbs 1, for the godly person, the parents are glad. A godly, wise kid makes his parents glad. A foolish, wicked kid makes his parents grieve or makes them sad. That is a very true statement. And for those of us who have kids and have grandkids, we know that is a wise and true statement. Verse 2 says, ill-gotten gains do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. First of all, you go, well, where'd that come from? It seems like Solomon would have just built on the previous proverb in the next one. These proverbs are in no order. They are truly just throwing out their random. Each one of them is meant to be held as a lesson in itself. Ill-gotten gains. This statement drives home the truth that ill-gotten gains, meaning some sort of treasure that you have received, you have obtained it by theft, because that's what ill-gotten means. Ill-gotten. Now let me give you an example what an ill-gotten gain is. We're really talking about how we do business. There's an ill-gotten way to do business, and then there is a righteous way to do business that leads us away from eternal death. But let me give you a temporal situation. A week ago, I needed to go up to Dallas to make a visit. And my brakes on my car, the back brakes, which have disc brakes, I knew I was running low, and they began to grind against the rotor. Now, I knew that because I've already put brakes on it before, that the rotor has been turned. That's the big disc that causes everything, the pads to smash again and stop it. I knew I was not going to be able to grind or have that rotor turned again. And so I went to a brake place because I was in a hurry and I did not want to do it myself, even though it's not a hard job. I didn't want to do it myself. I just did not have the time. And I asked them to put rotor and brakes on the back end. Well, they come back and I told them, I said, listen, I've already turned the rotors once. They checked it, came back. Yeah, you're right. And they came back and said, we don't have the rotor and we can't get it until tomorrow, but we have the pads. And I said, okay, well, slap a set of pads on there. And when I come back on Friday, I will come back by here if you can have the rotor, and we will put the rotor on. To which he says to me, now follow my line of thinking. He says to me, well, what you will do is, for your benefit, is you buy a set of pads with the lifetime warranty on them. And then when you come back from your trip, we will put the new rotor on and we will warranty out those pads and put a new set on for you. He said that to me. To which I, in return, I said, I have a problem with that. He said, what kind of problem do you have? I said, listen, the problem is you're asking for me to buy something, a set of pads that have a lifetime warranty that I am going to mess up because we're not going to, the rotor's messed up and it's going to mess up those pads. And so you're going to take somebody's product that they have sold to me and warranty it back to them so they'll give me a new pair as if something was defective about the first pair. Nothing was defective about the first pair. So what I want you to do is I want you to slap a non-warrantied, you know, just a regular set of pads on, and when I come back on Friday, I will buy a lifetime set of pads with a rotor, and then if they go bad, we'll warranty them then. If I allowed them to put the lifetime warranty pads on and then come back out of my being unable to wait to get it done right the first time, I am costing the original company money. That's ill-gotten gain. That's the way of doing business, of working the system to get ill-gotten gains or treasures. So needless to say, I paid for just a set of pads. They slapped them on, paid the charge. Friday went back in, got my rotor, got my new set of pads. Cost me more. It cost me more, but do you know what? I have no ill-gotten gains for that on my record. Now, I'm like you. We have all gotten ill-gotten gains somewhere along the way. We've all gotten them. They are tattooed on our soul of ill-gotten gains. We have all done that. I promise you. We can't live life without either accidentally or on purpose. Sometime when we were 4 or 5 or 6 or 12 or 18 or 21 or 31, sometime in our life, we have gotten an ill-gotten gain. But that doesn't mean that's the way we should do business as a godly person. And because we are working on wisdom and understanding and knowledge to be godly and in God's way, we want to make sure we don't make those same mistakes again. Okay, we've learned one time, but let's don't do it again. The sad part about it is I had to own an auto parts house for 5 years to probably realize that that was ill-gotten gain. Do you understand? I mean, I owned an auto parts house for 5 years. I sold auto parts. I know what it was like whenever I'd go open a box and somebody had taken a new part out and put an old part in a box and there's the old part there and it was supposed to be warrantied out and it wasn't done right. And it cost who money? It either cost me money or it cost the manufacturers money. Ill-gotten gain. We don't want to do that because that which is righteous, he says, delivers us from death. In other words, this whole thing is about the spiritual. It's about Rehoboam, those things and the ways that you do business and how you live your life. If you live it as an ungodly person, you're not going to head towards eternity with the Lord. If you live it as a righteous person and do what's right because they're godly, you're going to head towards eternity with the Lord and not towards death. So number two, we say, a godly person always does business in a way that it has eternal gains. An ungodly person does business so it has illegal gains. always doing business so that you are about being a witness to the next person who you see that you may never have known before in your life, but you've met them and your business needs to be with them such that there is no fear in anything about what will ever happen in the future and that you have not been a witness to them. Be sure you understand that everything you do in this life, you can run, but you cannot hide from people who know you, who know what you've done, who knows what kind of business you've handled, who know your integrity, who know what you live for and what you don't live for. And by the way, if you just got Jesus into your heart and your life, you better make sure that today, the day of your salvation, you make a 180 degree turn and stop doing things the way you used to do them so that the person who sees you tomorrow who knows who you were will go, you're not the same person you were day before yesterday. And they'll say, what happened to you? And you can say, I found Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And I'm headed in a new direction. And it really is true. The bad thing about being kids and being teenagers accepting the Lord is, it's like an inoculation sometimes. And we don't change the way we live because we have to go back to school and we still want to be popular and we still want to do this. But for adults who accept the Lord, it is a miraculous change for an old white-headed codger with a beard, looks like Santa Claus, to come to know the Lord as Savior. And it changes his life. And all of his friends and all of his relatives and everyone around him goes, boy, he's a different person. It truly is different. Truly is different when you accept the Lord. We're on the first page. We better get going. Here we go. We will not spend that much time, I promise, until the next one comes up. Number 3 out of 14. The Lord will not allow the righteous to go hungry, but he will thrust outside the craving of the wicked. What Solomon is trying to say here in this set of clauses, these proverbs, is that the Lord is doing the action. Actually, you got to understand whether you are saved or whether you are lost, whether you have the Lord as your Savior or you do not have a relationship with Him, the Lord is still the provider of everything that you have to meet your needs. The question is, are you happy with what the Lord is doing to meet your needs? Are you a lost person who is craving things that you do not need and you're upset when you cannot get them? The wicked person is the one who craves things and the Lord will not let them have it. But the Lord will provide the provisions that is needed. In other words, the Lord is going to feed you what you need. But if you're a wicked person, you're wanting more than what the Lord's feeding you, then you probably need to stop and evaluate your relationship with the Lord. Because if you're the type of person that says, I want it and I want it right now because I deserve it, so I'm going to go borrow money to get it, you're probably not in a good relationship with the Lord. Oh, your salvation is probably there, but your relationship and your growth with the Lord, where are you? If your God shall supply all your needs according to His riches in glory, then He's going to supply them for you. And if you do not have the funds to buy what you think you want right now, there is a reason for that. And usually, if you wait to find out later on why you didn't have the funds, you will realize that God was trying to keep you from a bunch of headaches, like those of us who never really ever leave work and stop working, but we decide we want to buy an RV. So you go pay $300,000 for a diesel RV to sit out there and weather away. Now, you know what happens to a piece of equipment when you're not using it? You know what happens? Now, is that wise? Now, listen, I could live in an RV. In fact, I can live in my boat. In fact, my joke around my house is, my case is, okay, Jim, if I die first, are you going to keep this house for Madison? And the answer is no. I'm selling it, I'm liquidating it, and I'm moving to 350 square feet in my boat. I could be happy in my garage if I just had a garage someplace. I do not need a lot of spaces. And I've been watching them RV movies, not RV advertisements, where I'm looking and going, boy, I can live in that. I can live in that. And when the hurricane comes, see y'all later. I'll be back. My home's intact. And besides that, I'll get out of all those taxes too. Oh, yeah. I like it. God, but listen, if you want that and you don't have the money for it, and you go pay a note on it, you know, if you're not going to use it, it's really foolishness. You can go rent one for the weekend. Oh, but it's not mine. No, but if you have a headache with it, it's theirs, and they'll fix it. You got to think through this. You know, the foolish person hops in his car and drives to Dallas because he just wants to go. The wise person goes and pays $29.95 for an enterprise rental car and puts the miles and the gas and everything on their car instead of yours, on the wear and tear. Now, if you got an airplane, that's different. You saw my tongue in cheek on that one. What is he's trying to say here is that the Lord is going to feed the hungry, but for the cravings of those who are wicked, the Lord's not going to help you with those. Verse 4 says, poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Now, understand here. We're talking Bible here. What is poor in the Bible? A person who is poor in the Bible is this. They have a shirt and a pair of pants and probably an outer cloak. Tomorrow morning when they get up, they're going to put on that same shirt and that same pair of pants and that cloak. And then the next day, they're going to put on that same shirt and that same pair of pants and that cloak. A rich person is a person in the Bible who has two shirts, one for today and one for tomorrow, so they can wash yesterday's and they wash it and they'll wear it the next day. And the same for the pants. A wealthy person in the Bible is the person who has enough to meet all the daily needs. A poor person is someone who has to struggle with what they have to make the daily needs. Oh, they've got it, but they have to struggle with it. Well, a negligent hand is a person who works poorly. Now, negligent hand, someone who doesn't work right. Let me tell you this. 99.99% of having a job and a paycheck is showing up for work, being there. I had an email this week from a woman who says, Dr. Jim, I need to look for a new job. I'm really tired. I don't have anything to do in this job. I spend my time playing games unless the phone rings and I answer the phone and take messages for my boss. But he has absolutely nothing for me to do. And all I do here is just take phone messages because that's all I do. So I emailed back. I said, is your boss in the office? Oh, no, he's always out on the road. I said, so how much do you make? I was amazed how much he paid her just to take phone messages or to be there in case somebody walked in. And I said, that's a really good paying job. She said, yeah, but I'm just so bored. I want to do something else. I said, that's a really good job. Do you think you have skills to do something else? I said, how do you type? I said, well, I'm not too good at typing. I said, do you know Word and Excel pretty well? No, I just said, do you know QuickBooks? No, I don't know QuickBooks. I said, boy, I tell you what, you better stay where you are. How long have you been with him? 15 years? Your job is to answer the phone for him because he's out working. You're doing an important job. And take a book, take something else, work, do something else. But you've got a great job, and it's a pretty good job. It really was. And I'm thinking, this is a good deal for you. The negligent hand says, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. I have a stinking feeling that she would not be successful at the other jobs. I was really surprised of how much she was making and who she was because I know her. And I was surprised that she was making that much money. However, on the other hand, the hand of the diligent makes you rich. Now, rich means provides what you need every day as you need it so that you don't have to struggle. We're going to get back to this in just a little bit. So, number four, the hands provide. For the godly, the hands provide. He does not work should not eat. The hands are negligent. Sad story. Last Sunday afternoon, we're having a meal across for all the visitors, and I get a phone call that we have a person over here by the children's parking lot that has all the children's workers all worked up out there, and some of the maintenance folks. He's looking for some help. He needs some help immediately. So they call me, and I leave the meal, and I go over there, and I get out of my car, and I go right up to the guy who's there needing help and call him by his first name because I know this guy. He knows where I work. He knows where my office is. He knows that this part of the building is part of that building over there. He's just over here trying to get money, and I start dealing with him, trying to figure out what his situation is right now. and what's going on with his girlfriend in the front seat, that they're not married. And I get to find out that he has still not worked in 6 or 7 months, and they're just living from hand to hand. And one of our maintenance guys opens his wallet out of the goodness of his heart and hands him enough money to equal 3 hours of work. And the guy just takes it, says, "Thanks, man," puts it in his pocket. Doesn't even do it graciously. To inside, I'm thinking, you maintenance guy, who you work here every day, you're here all your 40 hours a week, you're trying to earn a living, you're trying to do the best you can just to cover your bills, so you can cover your cell phone, because you can cover your lights, you can put the food on your table. You just gave 3 hours of work away to a person who could work, who is perfectly capable of working, has refused to get a job, who's got a girlfriend. They've been living off of churches and off of people's donations and standing on the corner of the street for over 6 months that I know of. And I know them by firsthand, to where I've even stopped giving them food until they get a job. And you just gave 3 hours of your hard time away. Don't give money, folks. Don't give money to people standing on the streets that are begging. They need to go get a job. They need to go get a job. Oh, yes, there's some of them we need to help get back on their feet when they've just lost a job. But these have not been working on purpose, and they are perfectly capable and able to do so. So that's just an example of what happens with a negligent hand. They get handouts, and yet they're starving. They come up with neat needs to go to the doctor, and they don't have the money. They come up with this and they come up with that. They don't have gas. It's been cold that night, so they run the car all night. So now they don't have gas in their car, so they need gas so they can just keep piddling around. That's the way it is. You have to understand. And he's right. Verse 5.